Welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the podcast of Moyo Talks and the Heart Center.
Right. Good morning, all, and welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the official podcast of Moyo Talks and the Heart Center. My name is Mark Bynd. I'm one of your hosts this morning, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome all of you to our platform. Just a little bit about myself. I'm an energy healer, an intuitive energy healer, and a teacher and trainer of energy healers, and also one of the co-founders of the Moyo platform. Our co-host this morning, Alex Marustica, who is also a life and business coach, one of the co-founders of the Moyo platform, and our technical partner. Alex, if you can introduce yourself.
Good morning, everybody. So good to be here again on another Monday morning with everybody. I'm really looking forward to today's hour together. I think it's going to be a good one.
Thank you, Alex. And our other co-host is Cindy Holmes. Cindy Holmes is an intuitive life and business coach and a director of the School of Intuition and Healing in Cape Town, and also one of our co-founders of the Moyo platform. Cindy, if you can introduce yourself.
Good morning, all. I'm excited about our conversation today. I think it's a great topic that Mark's going to introduce to us, and I'm looking forward to really connecting at the heart and just letting things settle in the heart space today.
Great. Thank you very much, Cindy. Now, as we go on, our topic this morning: how do we live our soul's fullest expression of itself? How would our life look like if we were living our soul's fullest expression? And what is holding us back from doing that? I'm going to be asking you guys to consider examples of people that you know or that you've seen living their soul's fullest expression. And also, I want you to consider the following question: what would you be doing differently in your life if you were living your soul's fullest expression of itself? And finally, I'm interested in knowing what is holding you back, what is holding us back, and what we can do about it. So as we go into this meditation to connect to the soul, I want you to consider those questions. Now, in the meditation, what we're going to do is we're going to raise ourselves up through the layers to connect to the soul group. So energetically, how this occurs is we've got our energy field, which has 7,000 layers and an auric sheath. We then have a torus, which is a field of energy that surrounds us. We then go into the oversoul that surrounds all of that. And from that, we go into the monad, which is kind of almost like a group soul, a smaller group soul. And then we go into the soul group, which is a bigger group of souls, as many as a million could be in that soul group, or even more. So that's kind of the energetic structure of the sort of soul upwards to the soul group and to a bigger soul group. And after that, you go into a group of soul groups and a collection of groups of soul groups and so on and so on. But it's sort of like a collective field of consciousness. And as we go through the meditation today, we'll go up to the monad, maybe up to the soul group, and really get in touch with the energy of your soul and your soul group. And when we're in that space, you'll have the opportunity to perhaps explore what it is your soul is saying to you, what it is that would actually truly make your soul sing. And then we'll go into the discussion to see what we can do about it and how to make that manifest in the world. I think I've covered everything. Have I missed something, Cindy?
Nope, I think you've covered what needs to be there. And I think the meditation will explain it in itself.
Okay. So get your bodies comfortable. And take three deep cleansing breaths. And with each cleansing breath, just release the tightness and tension from your body. Release any stress or anxiety from the body. release any tension from the body and allow the body to get comfortable, allow the body to become relaxed. And now simply start to follow your breath. And as you follow the natural rhythm of your breath, perhaps you'll find it useful to count your breath in to a count of four and to count your breath out to a count of four. And as you follow this breath cycle, just notice how following your breath in this way is very effective at quietening the mind and relaxing the body. Counting your breath in this way is quite a simple way of taking your mind into that lovely alpha state of meditation. And now if you forget about your breath for a moment, take your awareness down to the soles of your feet. And as you focus on the energy at your feet, just feel that energy and notice how that energy connects to the earth. In your mind, set your intention on being grounded. And perhaps you'll find it useful to imagine roots or anchors dropping from your feet down deep into the earth, connecting your energy intentionally with the energy of Mother Earth. If need be, you can drop another root or another anchor from the base of your spine. And as you set your intention on being grounded, you can state an affirmation in your mind, I am grounded. As you do this, you might notice the energy changing around your feet. You might notice the energy changing at the base of your spine. You might even feel that energy of Mother Earth flowing up your body, holding you, supporting you, strengthening you. And now take your awareness up towards the top of your head. As you focus on the energy at the top of your head, you might feel the tingling of your crown chakra on the top of your scalp. And from your crown chakra, take your awareness up to the source of all creation. Up to the highest point of light that you can imagine. Up into a field of divine light that spreads as far as the eye can see. And with your awareness in this field of divine light, allow this light to surround you and to hold you, to embrace you with feelings of unconditional love, total peace, and complete compassion. And with your awareness in this field of divine light, set your intention on bringing yourself into attunement with the divine. And as you imagine and intend your energy attuning to the energy of the divine, you can state a simple affirmation in your mind. I am attuned to the divine. And then invite that energy to pour into you. Bring that energy down into your body. Down through the top of your head and into your heart center. and start breathing through your heart center. Perhaps taking another three breaths through the heart center. And with each breath, just bring to mind loving thoughts, loving memories. Bring in the energy of unconditional love. As you breathe that energy through your heart, just turn up the intensity, turn up the volume of those feelings of unconditional love and infinite joy. Now, using that same energy of infinite love and infinite joy, surround your energy field with a bubble of divine white light. And ask that bubble of divine white light to protect you against all negative thoughts, energies, and emotions in the world around you. And in your mind, you can state an affirmation, I am protected. And then bring your awareness back to your heart center. And as you continue to breathe through your heart center, feeling those energies of unconditional love and infinite joy, take a few breaths and breathe that energy through your entire physical body, filling every cell, every atom, and every electron of your body with light, filling your body with love, filling your body with joy. And now with your next three breaths, breathe that light beyond your body. Breathing that light through your heart and out into your energy field. Allowing that energy to expand outwards. Now set your intention on bringing yourself into alignment with your higher self. The part of you that is in constant contact with the divine. The part of you that contains all knowledge and wisdom. And the part of you that has access to all the answers to any question that you might ask. You can imagine yourself coming into alignment with your higher self. You'll notice your energy growing stronger. And now with your next three breaths, set your intention on bringing yourself into alignment with your oversoul. The part of your energy that surrounds your entire energy body. And you can do that quite simply by stating an affirmation in your mind. I'm in alignment with my oversoul. As you do that, just feel the energy of your oversoul. Notice how that energy feels. Perhaps take three breaths through the oversoul to release any negative thoughts, energies, or emotions held at that level of your being. And now with your next three breaths, expand your energy even further and set your intention on coming into alignment with your monad, a collection of souls that you work very closely with. And you can state a simple affirmation in your mind. I am aligned with my monad. And perhaps take three breaths of light through your monad with the intention of releasing all negative thoughts, energies, and emotions held at that level of your being. And then simply spend a moment sensing that energy of the monad. Get a sense of how that energy feels. And then perhaps consider the following question. What is your soul's highest purpose? How can you live a life that is the fullest expression of your soul's purpose? And finally, consider this. What is holding you back from living the fullest expression of your soul's purpose? And now take another 3 breaths through your heart center in the middle of your chest. Bring your awareness back into your physical body. Become aware of your body. Feel your arms and your legs. And with your next few breaths, just set your intention on gently drawing your energy in. Just to a comfortable level for this conversation. Feel your feet on the ground and just once again set your intention on being grounded. And as you become aware of your body, even more, just feel your feet and feel your hands. Take a few breaths through the body, bringing your awareness into the present moment, into the present space. And when you are ready, you can open your eyes. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that meditation. I want us to start the conversation by considering examples of people that you think are living the fullest expression of their soul's purpose, so that we can get an idea of what that actually looks like in the world. Like, how does it actually look for somebody to be living the fullest expression of their soul's purpose? And yeah, if there are any examples, I would love to hear them. Yeah, Cindy says, Nelson Mandela, Princess Diana, and I'm not sure how she means that, but she also says Zuma. So there's an interesting one. Who has some examples of people who are living the fullest expression of their soul's purpose? Jennifer says Russell Brand. Do you want to expand on that, Jennifer?
Okay, Is that controversial?
No, I think you're right. I agree. But I'd like to hear how you see that playing out, how he's doing it, and so we can learn from it.
Yeah. Okay. He's an interesting character. And what I saw in his early career was, pretty in his ego. It could be argued that he might still be by some people, but I think his attempts to just really be authentic and come back to himself and the self-care and still put himself out there and do what he's really good at, which is speaking to people and having people listen. But what I saw him do was sort of go from his comedy to thinking and sort of expanding into really esoteric but also very complex thinking that he brought to his expression and still kept putting that out there. So I just like the way he is constantly coming back to being aware of himself, expressing that, and being real in the world now, I think, probably more so than he had been. And I like his work that he does with Luminary, with speaking to people, and his meditations that he talks about, and just the spiritual work that he does, and sort of all the things that he's dropped and attempting to drop and staying conscious and just, you know, keep coming back to being aware of his position in the world, but also his impact and, you know, him as a human. And I just see him being real, you know, kind of as real as he can be in his in the platform that he's in. You know, I don't see him performing as much as, you know, he had previously, really. But really that, yeah, he's kind of living his purpose to, you know, be himself. And whether, you know, I think he's inspiring, you know, he's inspiring his group of people, I think.
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. I like that. I think there are a couple of nice points that you made. Authentic and being real, doing what he's really good at, which I think is also what he enjoys.
Yeah.
And putting himself out there, although I don't necessarily think that you need to put yourself out there to live your soul's fullest expression. Not everybody is an extrovert or needs to be out there. Some people can live their soul's fullest expression and you'd never see or hear about them.
Absolutely. Coming from, you know, introverts here.
Yeah. Indeed.
I'm surprised with, but yeah, no, I agree with that. I think maybe putting himself out there in terms of taking a chance to be criticized for being, you know, something, speaking something differently that maybe everybody doesn't want to hear all the time, or challenging things in a different way than he might have been challenging before.
Okay, great, thank you. So other names coming up in the chat: Eckhart Tolle, Dr. DeMartini, Greta Thunberg, Elon Musk, all good examples. What about people that you know personally? Do you guys have any personal examples that you can share? Cindy, go ahead.
I'd like to take this conversation a little bit further, and the reason why I put the controversial people in there, because my understanding of the soul purpose and whatever is, and our soul groups and our contracts, is that it's a little bit more complicated, because we're all thinking around our purpose, which is what has been led to us. Are we living our purpose? Are we out there? Is our purpose to have the Moya platform and get out to people and all of that? I think it's bigger than this. I think what our sole purpose is here is really living the lessons we're here to do and living out our contracts as they were preceded. And why my feeling was, when we discussed the meditation, that we needed to actually go up to the soul group and to work out what is that is going, you know, that is going on. Now there are a number of people sitting in this conversation who I would say that I'm connected to that would be part of contracts that I've had with them across the years to step in and out of our lives at different times. And there are people that come and we do live lives that we are the perpetrator, and our sole purpose of being here is to cause grief for others. And we need to honor and still respect that we all come from the light and we all go back to the light. And that the purpose of people like Zuma and Trump are here to help us shift. Their contract is here. And I often wonder, and there's been, you know, things written, people like Hitler, was he sent because he was more evolved to create the pain and suffering in order for people to grow? So Neil Donald Walsh has this beautiful, it's called the Soul and the Sun. Sorry, someone's just arrived and the dogs are very excited. The Soul and the Sun, where they're saying, well, how do we know our light? How do we know, if I'm part of the sun, how do I know my light? And we need to go into the darkness in order to show our light. And for me, when I'm going through a lot of turmoil and a lot of difficulty, if I can rise above into my soul and go, why is this presenting itself? What is the purpose of this difficult time that I'm going through? And how can I, at a karmic and a spiritual level, actually bring in the lesson in order for, because that for me is the real purpose, is bringing in the light, acknowledging the light in others, acknowledging that the perpetrator has the light and shining our own light through that. It's really difficult when you're going through a very dark spot, especially if you're going through the dark night of the soul. But the dark night of the soul is created by that soul group. And that our learning and rising above it, because when we think of the crises that we've had in our lives 10 years later, when we were in it and it was awful and we didn't think we were going to come out of it, the purpose of that dark time will only grow our light and our purpose of being on earth, which is to shine our light and to shine our light so others can. And the times when we shine our dark, it's often a contract for those others to learn. Think of breakups that you had. Think of those, oh God, I always say when I was younger in my days of being wild and out there in London, and I would connect with someone, and if I knew what I knew now, I would be a lot more careful how I engaged with them, because they were there to teach me the lesson so I could be who I am today. So for me, our life purpose is that. And it's not do you know what I'm saying? It's not the elevated. And I just wanted to share that and why I use those, because all those beings who come here to teach us and shake the world around so we can go through, people who can make bad decisions so that we can learn. And I would just like to open that, because that was coming through really clearly for me as we were in that meditation, is our purpose is not the Moya platform and being a healer or whatever. It's finding the light within each other, no matter how dark they are.
I really, really like that, Cindy. That's a very important point, because, you know, we all come here to release blockages, heal wounds and so on. And that is probably, you know, just a basic level of reason for incarnation, is to like overcome some stuff, some patterning and so on. A Course in Miracles says everybody's got a purpose of forgiveness, to learn forgiveness in the world. And you can't really learn forgiveness without any perpetrator. You know, there needs to be a perpetrator for you to learn forgiveness. But in doing it, you kind of realize that actually there isn't a perpetrator after all. It was all in my mind, which is the kind of twist to the whole thing. Okay, who's going to take over from that? I'm a bit speechless now. Yeah, so let's consider this question. If we are here to release stuff and to overcome our conditioning and to learn lessons, are you managing to do that through this lifetime? Without, if we put the grand soul expression out of the picture for now, the sort of Elon Musks and the Dr. DeMartinis and the people that we see and the Russell Brands out. If we are to incarnate to heal, are we managing to do that in this lifetime? I suspect the people on this call are doing so. Perhaps let us know how you're doing that and what steps you're taking. I mean, until I started healing, I was like really, really stuck and life was really, really difficult and nothing was working. And it took that step to start the healing process for life to actually start to open up and to start to flow.
So I'd like to give you an example in my own life of this to portray something. I met this person and I should have seen I often tell the story in the healing course. I should have seen the danger when somebody owns a shop called Hocus Pocus and you get really excited because you think that this is it and you found your soulmate and they sell all these angel cards. And I was very, very early on my spiritual journey, and this person I connected with, and you know, this was true love and whatever. And this person was a witch of note. I mean, I often used to say she used to dangle me over the cauldron and threaten to drop me in. And there were all these spiritual experiences that happened, and it was like, but it was chaos. But that person really reflected my shadow to me. It was a nightmare in my life. They were a nightmare. They were nasty. They were horrible. But what it got me to do was it forced me to give up alcohol. It forced me to tell my father I was gay. And only 10 years later, in hindsight, did I see this life. I used to call her Cruella, or the witch from Hocus Pocus, who had treated me so badly and done all these awful things to me. That through that, I had the quickest, fastest transformation of understanding my own healing. And therefore, that person's purpose in my life was very, very clear, and that they were not an awful, wicked witch. They were living out their contract that we had signed before we got here or agreed to. There is no doubt in my mind, because when I met them, I mean, they had a black car called a Batmobile, and they used to wear shoes with wings on. I mean, it's just chaos, but so animated and so odd. But the lessons or the push that came through in a very short space of a year of being connected with this person who I called evil at the time just reflected to me that, and it 10x'd my transformation and my healing to bring me to where I am today. So I am so grateful for that personal contract with that person because of the gold dust I got from the lesson.
Thank you, Cindy. Val, you had your hand up.
I just like what Cindy said now about the contract. So it took me a while to find acceptance around the fact that the perpetrator in my life as a young child, which was my father, was part of his soul purpose. And I think I was on the healing course when Sue shared something in one of the teachings when I was learning, and I came to that realization and I was horrified. I thought, how can this possibly be that the perpetrator and my deep wounding was my father's sole purpose and his contract possibly made? And I think there's times when I still possibly feel a struggle around that, but there's far more acceptance. But the powerful part is the healing process that it put in place in my latter years was, obviously it was huge illness initially, and then the process of healing was so powerful, and that is why I am where I am today. And I remember one of the most significant times I had, which was with a very powerful talk therapist who said to me, who really understood the mind-body connection and guided me was when he explained to me that one day I would find meaning in this journey of healing that I was going through. And I thought, this makes no sense. And I can able to sit here with true acceptance to say that I found the meaning. I can accept most of the time. There's still times when there's a trigger around it for me. And I suppose that's part of the process of my healing still at a much deeper level, but that I could find meaning and find healing. And I think that's the power of recognizing. And when Cindy first called out the names of Trump and Zuma, I could feel the contraction in my body, but also the understanding that this is their purpose. This is their sole purpose, and whom I to actually judge. So to find acceptance around the purpose that somebody has been, their purpose that has been brought into your life and allows you to find your process and your healing is sometimes challenging, but very powerful. So yeah, just thank you for opening up this discussion about soul purpose. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Val. Erica, you got your hand up. Go ahead.
Hi, morning, everybody. Thank you, Cindy and Val, for your very pertinent words. And I must say that this acceptance around your healing or the trauma and its higher purpose really is to me really, really true, really valuable. I mean, for the last 20 years or so, almost 25 years, maybe my entire life actually, I have been in worse and worse traumatic situations around domestic violence, as to how to choose partners or friends or whatever else. Am I choosing these crazy people in my life? I mean, have I no clue? Am I so useless at determining a person's character that I have these people in my life? And when I established that my child and my partner had the same condition, and these were actually then, I could not dispose of my child, and I could dispose of my partner, but not of my child. How am I going to deal with this? So best I actually look at what's the learning behind all these things and why all these other people also came into my life. And what is my higher purpose? What is my plan? What is my understanding of this? And I gained a great deal of understanding that when a person is or has been a victim of abuse, of childhood trauma, of and ends up with post-traumatic stress syndrome and things like that, they, as Val said, almost have no control over their triggers until they go through their learning. So when I started realizing that the outbursts and things that I was party to were actually the triggers that I was somehow stepping on, if you were to put it plainly, that these people were then able to show me that this is a uncontrollable situation, so that if one actually needs to look at the wounds of greater communities and larger groups of people and things like that, and at the moment I'm looking at how does one heal or how one is triggered by trauma and how one actually just reacts or responds in a way that is almost uncontrollable. One has to learn how to create a different form of trust and steps for a person to work a different way. And it's really helped me to understand a purpose for myself and to have a greater understanding for people in the situation. They don't want to be like that and almost have no choice. And you say everybody has a choice to do what.
Okay, thank you, Erica. Thank you for making that point. That's quite interesting, talking about sort of like an involuntary response to trauma. I used to have an involuntary freeze response to conflict, and obviously stemming from conflict in childhood. But I didn't realize this until there was a perpetrator in my life who was like, you know, attacking me in a way, like verbally and emotionally. So my response to any conflict was to freeze, and literally I would start shivering. So we had a big meeting a few years ago, and unbeknownst to me, some people who didn't like me and what I was doing decided to launch a severe attack on me and my credibility and my integrity. And I literally started putting on layers, because everybody else was fine. Everybody else was actually hot because it was quite uncomfortable. I was like cold and shivering. And it was only after that I put the pieces together. It's actually, I'm having an involuntary response here, and I couldn't actually stand up to conflict, because I was avoiding it my entire life. And if you avoid conflict your entire life, you never get anywhere, because you're just going to be like a doormat, or you're never going to make any bold decisions. And what I had to do is, it then happened a few weeks later when I got an email from one of the perpetrators in this situation. I had the same response, and it was like a Friday night. I'd been sitting watching TV. I got an email and I started shivering all of a sudden. And I'm like, wait a second, I've got to actually process this now. And I'm so grateful to have this perpetrator in my life. So I went through a healing process of sort of doing like a kinesthetic release of that energy. And it doesn't happen anymore. And now I can actually be a bit more bold. I can stand up to conflict, because there was a perpetrator in my life, perhaps fulfilling his soul purpose, helping me to fulfill mine. I'm not sure about Erica's question about dealing with larger groups of people, because there's certainly an impact in the collective consciousness. There's like trauma held in the soul group, and we can see it playing out in South Africa and other countries. Cindy, go ahead.
So I was talking about this very thing, Mark, about this with my healer stroke spiritual coach last week, is that these people are who they are because we as a collective consciousness have created them, in terms of people or our communities are the way they are because of us as a species. So Neil Donald Walsh says highly evolved beings walking on the earth plane will say, I am that. So if somebody comes to you and asks you for money, you are part of that. So I am that. If you see something that is gross or whatever in our society, or you read the news and you see, you know, the police have shot three innocent people, or I am that. I am that. I am part of that consciousness. And the more we can remove ourselves from the stinking thinking within our own heads and taking all this responsibility, by the way, I'm the number one who does that, and wanting to control it or whatever, and actually I am that. So what can I do today to evolve to be better for that person? Whether it be, and that is the purpose, is that I am that. I am part of this collective consciousness. We put Trump in power. We put Zuma in trial. Collectively, we have the plastic in the sea that is there because collectively we put it there. And if we each take that responsibility, it's a really easy one because there's no heartache or anything. Let's just take plastic in the sea. And are we still using plastic earbuds and putting them in the toilet or in the dust? You know, yes, we are. Well, you know, and I'm that. And then we just raise that up. What are we doing differently? Ourselves, and I spoke about this on my podcast with Eric Edmeads, was what am I doing differently today as a result of the pandemic? How many things am I really doing differently as a collective consciousness? Because that is my purpose. Not my job and who I identify myself with and all of that. What am I learning each day? How am I shining my light? How am I, you know, how do others shine their light? That is my purpose. And all the ego and all the big plans and all the people I'm going to save and heal and have a better life. Is that my purpose? No, my purpose is to shine my own light every day as brightly as I can.
Thank you, Cindy. I like that. And I think the Ho'oponopono process is about that. It's about healing the part of yourself that is resonates with the wound or the trauma in another to facilitate healing. And it's very effective. Alex, you've got your hand up. Do you want to go ahead?
Thanks, Mark. And Cindy, thank you so much for what you just shared. Just a little reflection on my own experience with triggering and difficult situations in my life, and maybe also a little bit of response to the question of what are we doing to, to change. Or as I look back, it's very clear to me that when I don't learn the lesson that comes from a triggering or adversarial circumstance, then it recurs. And there's this recurring pattern. So if I look back, I have a recurring pattern of very similar toxic relationships that come in different forms in my life all the time. And it's really only recently, maybe in the last 2 years, that I have started seeing the pattern and started doing the work to get out of the pattern. I'm unfortunately in that very weird situation now where I can see the pattern, but the fear related to doing the work is still quite strong. So it's baby steps, because it's two different processes. One is the awareness, and then the other is the actual actions that are needed to get out of that process and deal with whatever the underlying fear or wound is. But definitely it's clear for me that when the lesson's not learned, someone else is going to come and try and teach you that lesson again, and will continue to, there will be new people coming in time and again until, and I imagine I may have many more in my journey of learning those lessons.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. Is that saying no situation changes until you've learned what you need to learn from it? Which is why I like the one lesson from A Course in Miracles. All things are lessons God would have me learn. Val, go ahead.
I like what Alex said about learning the pattern of, and then we can change, work with the trigger, and then there can be more of a response than a reaction. So I'm just going to put something else out there. So in, and this is probably more about my own process. So then there was another perpetrator in my life, which I had blocked and only had a sense of and became aware of last year, which was my brother, which passed away. And then that triggered the trauma. So if I think about the father as the perpetrator and then the brother as the perpetrator, I had no control of their arrival, but made the contract on the other side for their sole purpose. So that's quite significant for me, understanding that I made this decision and part of my sole purpose and their sole purpose. But then in that re-triggering of that trauma, which sits in the body, and I always come back to that trauma sits in the body, which is impacted deep in the body, and anxiety starts in the mind. So that deep trauma trigger then was interesting for me to have to work with in my process, because it took it to another level, which I think I'm still working with now, not around possibly the triggering, but understanding that could take it to another level of the triggering, but that purpose and the contract of that person, you know, in this lifetime, you know, was their journey. So it's still very interesting for me working with that understanding that the trigger of the previous part of my process of the dark night of the soul re-triggered another process and another dark night of the soul last year. So I think I'm more putting it out there as a comment than as having clarity and total understanding around that process that took place for me and the deep trauma that was triggered again. And that's still a process that I think we work with when it's deep trauma at such a deep, deep level. So I just wanted to put that comment out there.
Thanks, Val. Erica, you have your hand up. Do you want to go ahead?
Hi, yes. Around what Val's speaking about and what Alex just said, it's just, and Mark, what you were saying about conflict, that I've got something sitting beside me. I'm not quite sure how to say it out. But when you're sitting in a situation that you don't want to face the conflict, and you avoid the actual steps that one must take for the perpetrator or whoever it may be to learn their lesson, and as a normal course, something that you would perhaps say to somebody else that was separate from you, an objective observation. These are the steps that need to be taken for a person like that, or whatever, an organization like that, to actually learn the lesson. And you are preventing them from learning the lesson by avoiding facing these things because you are afraid of the repercussions and wanting to just kind of hide in a corner and not face the conflict. So I'm not quite sure how to say that in a kind of, Mark, you're quite good with putting things in a sort of more ordered fashion. So I don't know if what I'm saying can be heard in a more logical fashion. You know what I'm saying?
I think it just needs to be repeated, Erica, that when we don't stand up to the perpetrator doesn't learn the lesson that they are due to learn. We take the lesson away from ourselves and the perpetrator when we don't shine the light on it.
And further to that, when we rescue people from reaching the dark night of their soul, we also prevent them from learning the lesson, and we prolong the pain. Yeah. So the rescuing of a friend or a partner or whatever from actually going into their own pain body and just keeping them above that and not allowing them to drop into the pain and get the lesson and then come up. And you know, I've been responsible for that a lot. I'm in the family, you know, I love resolving my family situations and my friends' problems. I love it. I love to rescue them. It makes me feel so important. And it's by nature that I do that. Let them get to the grit. Let them arrive at the pain rather than saving something. Because it will happen. They are here with their purposes and their soul contract. So if you put plasters on and not allow the conflict or the breakup to happen, or you put the, you know, help them get back together again and whatever, and then 6 months down the line, they need to go through that pain. And there you are, I'll fix this. And yeah, so I've learned a lot of, I'm still learning that. I'm certainly nowhere near progress, but way off, doing that. And with our clients, guys, let your clients sometimes go through, allow them the gift of the dark night of the soul. Be there, but allow them that. Because often, as therapists, coaches, healers, We don't want them to walk into the dark night, and maybe they need to walk through the dark night to heal. And we can just be holding that space rather than talking them out of that space or intervening with some kind of whatever. And then we're prolonging that. So remember, sometimes we walk backwards with our clients and hold them in the backwards state.
Yeah. We can't take their lessons away from them.
Yeah. I really resonate with that, Cindy. But I also think there is some responsibility with that as well. So if I think about, say, the classic, the hero's journey, and, you know, the cavern or the ditch, really is, for some people, they really will stay in there and stay down there and, you know, maybe try and get back up the other way, back towards what has been, or, you know, just try and get out on this side and not quite make it. So I see absolutely not pushing people in, you know, sort of go to the edge and then in you go, and not going down and scurrying down and, you know, carrying someone out. But But I think as healers too, that you brought healers up, there is certainly a need and responsibility sometimes to maybe, you know, just have your hand held out, or, you know, not sort of dragging or, yeah, so responsibility, absolutely, not to carry somebody out, but to be there. And I think that for me also resonates with the times in my life when I've felt bereft of any aid or care or something like that. And, you know, that there's been somebody that will be in my environment, or, you know, someone that comes there. And I've, you know, likened that sometimes to my, you know, guardian angels, or, you know, just perfect people there at perfect times that, you know, have given me something that, you know, I've been able to hold on to actually, and just pull myself out a bit with a bit more ease maybe.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. Cindy says, I like the idea of offering a hand but not pulling them out. And it sort of goes back to one of the discussions we had in season one. Don't do for another what they can do for themselves. And I'm reminded of the story of a bird, that when the little chick is coming out of the egg, if the egg is broken from the outside, the bird doesn't have enough strength to survive. But if that shell is broken from the inside, that little chick can grow into a healthy bird. And, you know, as a parting comment, now that our time is up, I'd like to just suggest that maybe if we go through this level of soul purpose, of healing, that you can then graduate to another level of soul purpose and perhaps be the Dr. Demartini or the Russell Brand or somebody who is really shining a lot more light onto the planet than others. And perhaps you can only do that when you've been through the healing process and you've walked the journey. Guys, our time is up. It has been a wonderful conversation that took an interesting turn and didn't really go where I thought it would, but it went in the right place nonetheless.
Sorry, Mark.
Thank you for being here. I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Next week, Monday morning, 10 a.m. Do join us live. And the good news is the podcast is now on Spotify and several of your other favorite podcast platforms. But don't let that stop you from joining live. Share it with your friends. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Lovely to see you all. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.